pretzels.
Look.
What, chips?
Look. Who's the new guy?
Fanta.
I think he's looking at me.
Pretzels, you got it twisted. He's looking at me.
Stop being salty, Chips. We both got a chance.
Shh, he's coming over.
Ladies.
Hi.
And hello to you.
Back at you, handsome.
Fanta picked beef jerky?
Girl, we're gonna be here a while.
Fanta, the perfect partner to snacking. And it's available at Walmart. Grab a 2-liter today for $1. Fanta, it's a thing.
When was the last time you practiced your home fire escape plan? Be sure everyone in your family knows what to do if there's a fire. Get out, stay out. It's your fire safe response.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah?
You remember that ball game we went to a couple years ago?
Sure.
And how you didn't have enough cash for 2 hot dogs, so you walked with me on your shoulders until we found an ATM? And then when we got back to our seats, we never saw the hot dog guy again.
Well, I don't remember all that.
Yeah, that was an awesome game.
You never know which moments will be the ones they'll remember forever. So take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Tonight on Trackside, an IndyCar season unlike any other is about to come to a close. But before a champion is crowned Sunday at St. Pete, what will happen next season is a major part of the conversation. The points leader appears set to lose his wingman, so that prime seat is potentially open, and about a dozen others are unconfirmed. Some of those teams are scheduled to test all of their cars a week after the season ends. Will deals be done by then? And did you see the wild finish in sports cars on Saturday night in the Petit Le Mans at Road Atlanta? IndyCar star Alexander Rossi reminded everyone again how good he is by storming to the front late at a track he'd never seen in the dark. And then the fireworks started. But for now, the focus is on the title, the scenarios, the two contenders who have both won it multiple times, and the 15th straight season for a championship-deciding IndyCar finale.
Dixon gets back-to-back wins at Sonoma, but we can't give this championship to him just yet. We wait for the rest to come across the line, and Montoya cannot do it. Scott Dixon not only wins in Sonoma, but wins the 2015 championship.
We win on the tiebreak.
Incredible performance. Winning on a tiebreak now at the final race of the year. He gets his first win in Sonoma, and Simon Pagenaud is the 2016 Verizon IndyCar Series champion.
Winner in championship.
Simon Pagenaud wins in Sonoma, but Joseph Newgarden is the 2017
awesome.
Verizon
awesome
IndyCar
job,
Series
guys.
Champion.
Great team.
Great job, team. Awesome work. Awesome stuff. Thank you, guys.
Something that hasn't been done in 51 years since A.J. Foyt did it. Scott Dixon is about to become a 5-time champion. Credit where credit's due. Ryan Hunter-Reay wins the Grand Prix of Sonoma. But we witness something that hasn't been done in more than half a century. Scott Dixon is a 5-time IndyCar champion. Colton Herta wins at a track where his dad did.
Great job, buddy. Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby.
Awesome win for the Harding Steinbrenner team and Colton Herta. And further up the hill, we pick up the Hitachi Chevrolet of Joseph Newgarden. He was a champion in 2017. Joseph Newgarden is the 2019 champion. He's done everything he needed to do and comes across the line with a 25-point buffer.
Well, it's race week. Race week, here we are, season finale. A lot to cover tonight's show, Trackside with Kurt Cavan. I'm Kurt Cavan. And Kevin Lee and Brad Huber back in our Indianapolis studios. We've got a lot to cover. I'm still trying to track down Kevin, who I think will be with us shortly. But we've got a championship to decide. Joseph Newgarden needs a 32-point gain on Scott Dixon to secure his second championship in as many seasons, third overall. That would be 3 in 4 years for Newgarden. Dixon, on the other hand, in complete driver's seat. He's got a, as I mentioned, a 32-point lead. Needs to finish ninth or better to secure his sixth championship. And it would be, He seems to have these in big spurts. I'm not sure I could rattle off all five of them in terms of the years off the top of my head, but it started in 2003, and he just continues to pile these up. A sixth championship would put him just one shy of A.J. Foyt's all-time record. He had broken a tie a couple years back in the four-time category with several drivers. And now Scott Dixon is looking at history-making effort. So he basically needs to finish in the top nine and not worry about what Newgarden does. But if Newgarden finishes in first or second, he's got a realistic chance because Dixon's average finish in St. Petersburg, I believe I read that it was about eight. I hadn't looked that up myself, but I know he's finished second on three or four occasions, but we've had like 15 or 16 races. So it hasn't always gone well for Scott Dixon in St. Petersburg. We finished the season in St. Pete for the first time. Been racing down there. IndyCars have in this series five, always the first or the second race of the season. Of course, this one moved back to the end of the year because of the pandemic. We're lucky at this point to even have a St. Petersburg race. We'll talk with Kevin Savary later in the second hour, and he is the president and COO of the Green Savary Promotions, which occupies stewardship over not only St. Pete, but Toronto, Mid-Ohio, and Portland. So a lot to get to. Kevin will jump in when Kevin is on the line. I can't tell if Kevin has joined us yet or not, so I will continue with our preview of what's to come tonight. We're going to have Pato Award join us on the show. He has produced a really outstanding season for the Arrow McLaren SP team. His team is in the news, of course, today as the teammate car, the number seven, driven at least for most of this season by Oliver Askew, has named its driver for this weekend's race, and it will be Oliver Askew. Of course, he has not been retained for the 2021 season, but coming off his I guess you would call it a head injury. It would be. At least fair to say that he was shook up after the Indianapolis 500 crash back in August, dealt with some symptoms, dizziness, lack of concentration, irritability. I think most of us know what those symptoms are when you've had your bell rung. And he has been cleared by the IndyCar medical team that apparently came today. Because the entry list came out this afternoon, and there are 24 car and driver combinations on it. Oliver is in the number seven cars, and the team issued a couple statements, which I can pull up here in just a moment. But it is good that Oliver will be back in the seat, at least for the final time, with Arrow McLaren SP. And as you recall, during the Harvest Grand Prix, he sat out that race, and Elio Castroneves took his place. And so we're back to the young driver patrol at Arrow McLaren SP for this race with Pato Award and with Oliver Askew. I was looking for the actual statement. Oliver says, "I appreciate all the support Arrow McLaren SP has given me through this difficult time. I would like to thank Dr. Billows and the IndyCar medical team, as well as Dr. Collins and the UPMC Sports Medicine Concussion Program for their advice and care, which allowed me to take the time I needed to fully recover and prepare for the NTT IndyCar Series finale. I'm looking forward to a strong finish to this season." And I believe we have Kevin has joined us. I will be pulling up the Sam Schmidt statement. Kevin, have you joined us?
Yeah, and you know what? I think we should just break and restart and delete what's happened here on my technology. And I've had it with 2020, as you know. So I have no idea what's happening. But if you want to finish up your thought, take us to break, and we'll restart and reset coming up in a moment.
Well, that's a good way to put it. It is a very 2020 edition of Trackside with Cavan and Kevin. Kurt Cavan, Kevin Lee in separate locations, Brad Huber in our studios. Kevin has suggested a break, and we'll do that. And on the backside, we will start clean. Trackside with Cavan and Kevin next on 107.5 and 93.5 FM.
This is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Sunday afternoon, the NTT IndyCar Series season comes to a close where it was supposed to start originally in March. The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg is coming up, IndyCar Radio. I don't know if that includes this station, to be honest. I have no idea if the Colts play Sunday afternoon or not. If they do, then it won't be here. It'll be somewhere else. You can find it on IndyCar radio stations and NBC, network television, WTHR Channel 13 in Indianapolis, 2:30 start time coming up on Sunday afternoon. And then the championship celebration after things are finished. It's a two-day show, unlike most street events, so everything gets started for IndyCar on Saturday. Now, the Road to Indy is finishing up their season, and they get started on Friday and going throughout the weekend. But the first practice is done on NBC Sports Gold, and it is a long practice, two-hour practice on Saturday morning, then qualifying for the first time since July 4th weekend, knockout qualifying with the Firestone Fast 6 coming up at 3 o'clock. That's live on NBC Sports Gold. It will air on TV at 8 p.m. on Saturday night on NBCSN. And then on Sunday, there is a warm-up at 10:40, 30-minute warm-up on NBC Sports Gold. And the drivers will have already started their engines. So this is another warning. No, it's not a 35-minute pre-race show and you have time to settle in. Be there at 2:30 because we're going to get started right then. The green flag is at 2:32 coming up on Sunday afternoon, which allows an opportunity to talk to the champion, talk to the race winner, and more coming up after we're done. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Kevin Lee. Brad Huber is in our studios in Indianapolis at the Emmis Communications Worldwide Headquarters downtown. Kurt Cavan is with us as well. A lot to get to, and you've talked a little bit about Oliver Askew. Very happy that Oliver has been cleared. We'll talk more about that and the upcoming 2021 conversations about a lot of different things. But let's talk championship first. It's pretty simple for Scott Dixon, Kurt. He guarantees it by finishing ninth. Newgarden would have to win and score max bonus points. And then I think the second number to look at is if Newgarden did not win, but still scored max points, meaning he won the pole on Saturday and led the most laps, I think Dixon could still finish as low as 18th and win the championship. So it's really first or second. There is a scenario for third, but that's going to include bonus points. So as long as Newgarden is running up front, he's going to be in play because it's a 24-car field, and we normally don't see a lot of attrition. So that's why I think it is likely to still, you know, be a little bit hold-your-breath circumstance for Scott Dixon, no matter how comfortable we might think that lead is.
Well, I think it is going to be hold-your-breath. This is a racetrack that, you know, with concrete walls, this is close proximity in a lot of places on the street circuit. And you've got a lot of drivers still out to prove something or looking for their first win of the season. I think when you're talking about max bonus points, one of the things I start with is Joseph wants to win the pole, and the guy he's got to beat, his own teammate, Will Powers, won 8 of the last 10 poles at this facility. So, you know, there's just a lot of things in play that work against Joseph Newgarden or work in Scott Dixon's favor. But as you said, without a lot of attrition historically, at least in recent years, you've got the sense that if Joseph is running in the top three or four and, you know, could get to the front, then Dixon needs to be on his game. You think about last year when Newgarden was trying to protect a championship. There was a couple moments where he was, you know, running sixth, seventh in those last couple races. I think Portland is one where I started to watch where Joseph was, and you know, he needed to continue to run well, and Scott does too. In this case, he needs to, you know, there's not a lot of separation in this field between running fifth and running 10th. So if Joseph gets to the lead, or is running second, Scott's going to hang in there and not have any mistakes, or not have someone else make a mistake around him.
You know, certainly Joseph doesn't have control, but if he can win the race, it does not take an awful day for Scott Dixon, or even a bad day for Scott Dixon, to lose this championship, even though this 32 points is one of the largest leads we've seen in many years. I think going back to 05, I think I'll look through my tweet. Someone did look that up for us. Chad 200, I think, did the math for us last week. You know, considering this is like a 64-point lead in that double points scenario that they've had for the last 5 or 6 years. And when I say, you know, not an awful day, it would just be simply, basically what Dixon has been doing in the last four rounds. In the last four races, he's finished 8th, 9th, 10th, and 10th. So two of those four would not be enough, and the other two would be right on the brink of not being able to get it done. I think 9th would come down to tiebreak. If Newgarden won, they'd have equal wins, but Dixon would win the championship by more second-place finishes than Newgarden, is I believe what I read in that case. Just one other note, too. I think Townsend Bell, I don't know if he looked it up or if Russ Thompson looked it up for him and told us, but we'll get Russ to confirm this weekend. But Townsend told me that this has been the worst four-race stretch for Dixon since the Toyota years, since 2005 or three. Six?
No,
since
I think
three?
That was...
Okay. Six would have been Honda, so it'd be somewhere 3, 4, 5, and 3 was a championship year. Now, he did have, I think,
four
a little
and five.
Bit of a lull late in the year.
Yeah, it was.
2005, you're telling me?
Yeah, well, remember, he's talking about those couple years. In fact, he crashed on back-to-back laps in Milwaukee. He was in practice and then in qualifying, so they end up holding him out of the race. But, yeah, it has been, you know, really forever. 04, 05 is correct. It was after his championship year. But it's been a long time since he had a stretch like this.
So the point being that it's not been going great there. Now, it's not even been horrible luck. There have been some breaks that have not gone their way, and there was at least one race with some contact. So still in my to-do list this week is to kind of go back and look at and dissect each of those races for Dixon before we get to the broadcast this weekend and what the circumstances have been. You know, I wouldn't think that this is Scott Dixon or his team buckling to the pressure. He's been through this enough. There's a lot of other things involved in motorsport, but it is still somewhat open, and it will be dictated on Newgarden staying up front. And in this kind of a race, until we get to the final pit stop, it's still going to be in play. Even if something goes wrong and Newgarden is running 14th or 15th early, you know, then he's going to be looking at going off strategy. And I haven't crunched the numbers on fuel mileage and what the pit windows are and so forth at this point, but you're going to be trying to get in at some point before a caution comes out. And then, but here's what I think we'll see happening, is that Dixon is going to want to cover him. Unless they do something so extreme, because if your only chance is for something wild to happen, if you're Newgarden, you know, I think you do go ahead and pit knowing, well, if it stays green the rest of the way, we're not going to make it. But you go ahead and do that a few laps early because you need to do it at a time when Dixon won't cover you, meaning he won't follow you into pit lane, because then he would be in jeopardy of being in deep jeopardy as well. But that's the challenge that's going to be faced this weekend. 100 laps, this is a little different. Isn't this normally about 110 laps?
Yeah, it is. And I'm sure TV window has something to do with that. I didn't hear an exact reason.
That would make sense. And I forget what's on the back end, but there's something on the back end that needs to happen. It's a live event that needs to happen after IndyCar on Sunday afternoon. And they want the race to finish in time to see the championship celebration. You know, it's probably not going to be 35 minutes drawn out like it has been at times. I think this is going to be pretty succinct and quick, and a chance to get your champion on Sunday afternoon, even though it's head-to-head with football. And, you know, let's face it, the ratings are challenged for anything that's not the NFL head-to-head. But it's still going to be a better audience than you get on cable, and it's still your champion on network television. It was nice to see the promo on Sunday Night Football, hearing Al Michaels talk about the championship on Sunday night coming up from St. Pete. So those are kind of the numbers. That's one thing. And you mentioned there are some other things in play. We've mentioned this a little bit, but from a dollars and cents standpoint, you know, in Formula One, one of the fascinating, in fact, sometimes the only fascinating thing about the races are those getting into the points paying positions. Well, here in this case, it's going to be a race between Marco Andretti and the 20 entry. In this case, it'll be Connor Daly this weekend, the 26 entry. Who else is in play down there? The 14 entry, Sebastian Bourdais, the 4 at some point. There are 22 leader circle positions, I believe, and 23 full-time drivers. And right now, Marco Andretti's number 98 is on the outside looking in of about $1 million towards next season, which is about a fifth or sixth of a team's budget. That's a big deal.
Well, it is a big deal, and it's a big deal for even the big teams. So, yeah, that will be something to watch, and that's why we've seen some of the driver movement that we've seen. Bourdais in the 14 car, for example, for this race, and the two we saw at Indianapolis. This, by the way, important for that conversation, Bourdais has won a couple times in St. Pete recently. So he will be one that should have a good weekend.
Yeah, he should be good. And that's one of the reasons they did that. And I think that's one of the reasons why the 26 team made their change. And yeah, everyone is challenged by budget. And what we don't know about this year's deals, the teams have to give some money back or allocate it towards next year's agreements with partners for not being able to entertain at the track. So yes, you've gotten your races in, most of them, and you've been on television and you've done what you can, but so many of these agreements are based on companies being able to bring their guests, clients, friends, family, so forth, to the track and experience big time motorsport up close. And generally speaking, that hasn't been an option. So there may be some make goods coming up, and that makes the leader circle even more important for next season. Championship also, Kurt, you know, what do we think as far as the points are concerned? What other things kind of stack up? You know, I think there's a really good battle for third between at least three people. I would say Herta, Power, and Award, who, by the way, Pato Award is going to be on the show coming up in about an hour, and also Kevin Savory of Green Savory Promotions, and a lot of good things to get into with him about mainly how has their company survived this pandemic when they've had multiple events canceled and others changed and so forth. But does that seem about right that it's Herta, Power, Award battling for that third spot?
Yeah, so I looked it up. Herta cannot catch Newgarden for second. He could finish third, fourth, or fifth, so that obviously will be important. Power trails Herta by 13 points. Award trails third place Herta by 25. So as we've discussed in the Dixon Newgarden situation, 25 seems like a lot. Graham Rahal stands sixth. He could catch Award for sixth place. So really from third to sixth will be a really interesting watch. Of course, we heard from Graham Rahal a couple weeks ago saying, I could care less if I don't win the championship. Second or third or fourth doesn't make any difference to me. There is some point difference or a payout differential I believe, for the top five. So there will be some extra money on the line, to at least there has been historically. So that is something to watch. And I know I know from previous conversations with Pato that and we can see it. There's still a little bit of competition there with Colton Herta. So anything he can do to catch Colton for third place would be really important personally for Pato. And I'm sure the same is true for Herta, although he's looking bigger than any singular rivalry. We've heard that from him last week.
Yeah, I think third means something. You know, finishing on the podium of the season, probably not a big difference between fourth and fifth, but I do think fifth kind of carries some status. And it also depends on, you know, who the driver is. A young driver like Pato O'Ward, as much as he does want to finish third, I think finishing fifth in his first full season is still going to be considered as a very significant accomplishment and just looks a lot better than finishing sixth. But even for a veteran like Graham Rahal, you know, and he told me the same thing a month or so ago, you know, wins are what matters. We finished in the top five before. But now when you get down there and this is the goal, if a win isn't in play, I think even for a driver like Graham, finishing in the top five strikes you a lot better than finishing sixth or seventh. And by the way, Graham's going to be quite distracted this weekend. I think Courtney is due in about a week and a half, something like that. So, you know, rescheduling and extending the season didn't quite work well into their plans a little bit. So I'm sure he's going to be on standby. I wonder, I will ask, is there a driver on standby for him if they feel the need? I haven't checked in to see whether they've planned anything, but sometimes, you know, you don't get to plan these things. Sometimes even if you've scheduled delivery, you know, the little fellow or little girl says we're doing something a little bit differently. So have you heard anything on that front? Does he have a backup plan for the weekend or the team?
I have
rather?
Not heard. I suppose what makes the most sense would be Spencer Pigot, but that's still, yep. I'm sure their plan is to go on and race. They could, of course, come up with a couple different scenarios. I'm sure you get to Rookie of the Year competition. That's pretty well, that's wrapped up at this point. Rinus VK yep. will be your Rookie of the Year. So there are a lot of things to watch.
You know, that started off like it was going to be such a fantastic story throughout the season, but Alex Palou has not had the season that he had hoped for. I think he's still shown very well and has shown a lot of potential, but it looked like it was going to be between Rinus VK and also Oliver Askew, but obviously Oliver hasn't been able to finish the season, so that ended things on that regard right there. So Rinus VK has it locked up at this point. You know, entry list, I think you mentioned this, but along with Oliver Askew being back in the car, I think a lot of eyes, certainly on the international scene, are going to be focused on Scott McLaughlin. You know, I know we generally talk championship for this race, but I think we're going to try to do as best we can to really focus on some of these other stories, like the things we've talked about, and really just about the fascination. How does a guy that's never raced a Formula car, an open wheel car, above the F1600 level, how does he run an IndyCar? Now, he's got a lot of other high horsepower experience, and he's won three championships and a very esteemed championship in Australian supercars. I think it's also one thing to show well on the road course at COTA. To come in and do well at a street race with one long practice, qualifying where you get a handful of laps and a 30-minute warm-up. If he somehow runs near the front in this one, then, you know, I think we already feel like he's a championship contender when he figures it out, but we might be able to say he might be one as soon as next year.
Well, I mean, I'm less, I don't want to say optimistic, but I would be less confident in saying he'll run for the championship next year. What I would think would be a more likely scenario is he's going to have, based on Team Penske's performance at that racetrack, he's going to have a very fast car. And of all the people who might really have their radar up on Scott McLaughlin, and that would be Scott Dixon, because you could envision a scenario where he qualifies, Scott McLaughlin does, in or around or in front of or next to Scott Dixon. And that would be a variable, in spite of all the confidence that he has in Scott as a driver. Scott Dixon would be a little concerned with having a first timer start on a street circuit in a formula car like that. That would be a variable that Scott Dixon would be very alert to. And again, I think it's really possible that he qualifies well. Now, the red tires are sometimes difficult in a qualifying session when you haven't had the chance to run them. But again, because of Team Penske's, I think, 9-10 poles at St. Pete and the number of wins, I would say that Scott McLaughlin is going to qualify pretty well. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in that first 8 or 10.
I think that would be a massive accomplishment. You know, and the point I was making is if somehow he does run up front, then it's let the hype machine begin. And I think the hype machine is going to be there, you know, whether – and by the way, we don't know if he's full-time or not next season. That's not been confirmed at this point. But I think they're making plans that is at least a possibility. You know, maybe only top five is realistic for someone making this transition, even in a great program. And that would probably still be considered a really good season. But if somehow he runs in the top five on speed, like he did at Circuit of the Americas, it would be, whoa, this guy's one of the best talents we've seen. You know, and the comparisons are going to be from Robert Wickens, who qualified on pole, I think, at St. Pete in his very first race. Now, he had had more testing time leading into the season, and he had also done more formula car racing, almost reaching Formula One. So I don't think these are exact comparisons. The comparison is, all right, let's think outside the box. Here's someone that has made his name doing something else. DTM in Wickens' case, supercars in McLaughlin's case, a good driver is a good driver. But Wickens did have that background of racing basically in something even a little more powerful than Indy Lights, you know, in the GP2 or F2 or whatever it was called at the time. So that scenario is, I think, what helped Robbie get there. But McLaughlin was so impressive in that open test that made us kind of wonder. And the point you make about qualifying nearby is something to keep in mind. I think what also it does for Joseph Newgarden, and possibly one of the incentives for Team Penske, was, well, this gives us one more car that has a chance to finish in front of Scott Dixon. Because even as we talked about, Newgarden wins the race, Dixon needs to finish 10th. So, well, we can at least, in our hands, make sure he finishes no better than 5th if our cars finish, you know, in the top 9. And I think they also have the ability, and this will be interesting to watch during the race. You know, I talked about shadowing stops that I would think Dixon, if it's not too far off strategy, is going to want to try to cover what Newgarden does in the event of a yellow. And from what we're talking about, for those of you that are casual fans in street course racing, if a driver pits and has gotten his stop done and most of the rest of the field has not stopped yet, if it goes yellow, then they bunch up. And then when you need to take your stop under yellow, they peel in. And then those that have already stopped just cycle to the front. And though, if, say, you're Dixon and 10 have already stopped, well, then the best you're going to be is 11th at the end of that pit stop. So that's why it's always good to get in before that yellow, and you might want to cover that. And watch out to see if Simon Pagenaud or maybe Will Power is asked to do this. And it depends on, you know, where they qualify and what their chances in the race are. Or McLaughlin, especially if they're running ahead of Dixon. Do we bring them in anytime Dixon pits? And to make sure that he just doesn't have clean track, because that's the other thing you do when you pit off strategy. You want to make sure that you have clean track. And if you're super fast, especially if you have a bobble in qualifying and are starting in 10th, and you'd like to get some clean track to make up some time when the track is clear ahead of you. Well, if you're covered, then that, and they could even short pit. They could come in and do short fill, knowing that this is going to hurt us the next time around, but we'll give it a go here to help Newgarden have a chance. So those are some of the factors I think we'll be watching for in this particular race. We started off talking about entry list there. Probably also should mention a couple of weeks ago, it was uncertain. I think there was even an article that mentioned that Sage Karam and Dreyer and Reinbold would be entered in this race. They are not. So that's why it's 24. We had thought maybe at one point there would be 25. And the third Foyt car is not here. And that was planned. When Bourdais was signed on to finish the season, it was never mentioned that Dalton Kellett would do this race. He was just going to do the two at Indianapolis. But this was not one of Dalton's races for Foyt. Anyway, you remember this was supposed to be Bourdais' race back in March when the season started. Kurt, how much do you think all these dozen drivers that are looking for a job, what does this weekend matter for them? Auditioning to other teams, auditioning to partners they're trying to get sign on to sponsor them for 2021?
I don't know. I just don't I don't feel like, because we're this deep into the calendar, meaning normally these things are set in terms of negotiations for other rides, I think what you've shown is what you are. I don't think there's any last minute interview type performances you could deliver unless you went out and just won a race. Something I looked up, you know, this race, because it falls so deep in the year, and next year's St. Pete race to open the season is March 7th. There's only 133 days between end of season and start of next season. This past year, because of the pandemic, there were 258. And the year before, which is more normal, we had 175. So there's really 40 some days shaved off of this calendar, the off season. And I think most of the discussion in terms of planning, I just don't think there's anybody's mind's going to be changed or altered in this short period. I think we're going to see. We've already seen some start to come together, and I think we'll see more rides filled very quickly. I just don't think I don't think you can prove anything with one more race on St. Pete.
I would go 100% the other way. I think what you're saying applies to the team side. I think the teams know what the drivers are, and one result may not mean everything. Boy, I think it even does with the teams. And I've heard of examples of team bosses, owners, managers before saying that was the performance. You know, Iowa for Joseph Newgarden injured was the one that convinced Team Penske to sign him, and others over the years. And I think I'm more thinking of if you're Alex Palou and you're trying to convince Mr. Go whether he wants to invest several million dollars in you again, you don't think Alex Palou finishing on the podium this weekend's going to help his cause? If James Hinchcliffe is still in talks with Genesis, if that's not been signed yet, if finishing on the podium doesn't change that a little bit, I think there are a lot of decision makers with companies that are being pitched right now and are thinking about it that can be swayed with pictures on the podium or in victory lane. I think a lot is in play for the – is someone thinking about hiring Rinus VK next year? Well, if he wins this last race as a now 20-year-old, that's going to play into things if he hasn't already signed with someone.
Well, let me just clarify here just a minute. I think within the paddock, I don't think the decisions will change much. How people feel about drivers, how Dale Coyne feels about Alex Palou, how team owners feel about Rinus VK, taking a podium finish out of the equation, because I do think those are influential. But what you're saying is some of the guys who are wanting to build their financial offering,
I'm saying
to teams,
securing a job for next year, and that's all part of it. Securing a job, it's impressing the teams, but more so getting someone to pay the teams, because
more
that's
so
what's most important to the teams.
Yeah, I would agree with the more so part of that.
Okay, so that's why I think this really does matter, and you're going to see, you know, does Charlie Kimball have anything set with his longtime partners? A top five finish, a top 10 finish in the circumstances where that is slugging above their weight this year from what they've been doing. I think those kind of things will factor into everything. So I think a lot is in play. Marcus Erickson's backers, you know, what do they think? They may already be in, but if anybody's on the fence at this point, you know, they could be saying, well, wait a minute, you told me going to Ganassi, you could win races this year and you're going to be on the podium. And where have you been so far? I think that might be asking a little bit much when you consider the competition, but you never know. So a good finish for even someone like that, that's been a well-funded driver, I think can play into things. Okay. Up next, let's talk more about the number 10. And nothing has happened since about this time a week ago. David Malscher reported on Motorsport that Felix Rosenqvist was going to take over the number 7 car for Arrow McLaren SP. We've had a week to think about it. What are the options for Ganassi? Anything else in that regard? And much more coming up on Trackside, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
I'm Tony Kanaan, and this is Trackside with Kurt Covin and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Hey, by the way, I learned that the IndyCar finale, the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Pete, will air on this here radio station coming up this Sunday, because this shows how out of the loop I am at this point. I'm still watching, but my job doesn't depend on it, so I'm a fan. When I check Sunday afternoon, are the Colts on? I'll watch. Okay. They're off this weekend. It's their bye week. So that means it's clear for Mark Janes and IndyCar Radio coming up on Sunday afternoon. I'm guessing they have a longer pre-race show, probably 2 o'clock or so, and we're on NBC at 2:30 with a 2:32 green flag. Also, I know some people have been asking, I don't have a link yet for the Formula Ford Festival coming up at Brands Hatch this weekend, but I think you can just search it on YouTube. There's a TV broadcast, and what it looks like is the BRSCC, which is British Racing Sports Car Club. They do the feed, and it's a pretty good broadcast. And they will be racing this Saturday. There's something like 75 entries, and you have to be in the top 25 or 30 to get to race in the main race coming up on Sunday. So Jackson will be in the number 22 Team USA Scholarship Low Dempsey Racing car with Caldwell Realty and Tanemic and Caldwell Subways and so many partners. And his friend Bryce Aaron is in the 21 car, I believe. And we got pictures of them in their new Team USA suits today. They had setup day, and they're testing tomorrow and Thursday and Friday at Brands Hatch. So I'll tweet out some links, but it's going to be really early on Saturday and Sunday. So that's what's coming up. We've got Formula One this weekend. We've got NASCAR at Texas. And we got IndyCar, of course, from St. Pete. All right, Kurt, last week about this time, we were learning about the report as we were guessing on what some options might be for the number 7 car with Oliver Askew being moved out of that seat. And Felix Rosenqvist was really high on my list of potentials because I had been hearing that the 10 car just wasn't set as far as sponsorship at this point. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But I wanted to keep an eye on that. And, well, that's apparently what's going to happen. And then afterwards, so I saw Jenna Fryer got a quote from Chip Ganassi. And his quote was short and didn't really want to go into much. It was just simply, as far as I know, FR is still under contract until the end of the year. And she may have shortened that. Maybe he said Felix Rosenqvist. And that was clearly just a statement because Marshall Pruitt had the exact same thing. Felix Rosenqvist is under contract throughout the end of the year. Marshall also wrote on Racer.com last, I guess, probably Tuesday night or Wednesday, in a conversation last Thursday, so this is almost 2 weeks ago, regarding Rosenqvist's future with the team and then rumors he was headed to Arrow McLaren SP. Ganassi confirmed his interest in ongoing efforts to retain the Swede, but based on multiple sources, it would appear the 29-year-old was signed before CGR was able to complete a contract extension. Multiple calls last week to Rosenqvist and his manager were unreturned. End of the story. Oh, also, by the way, Rosenqvist's manager is Scott Dixon's manager. But when you represent the 5- or 6-time champion, you can deal with those things. And that manager, by the way, is also former IndyCar and Formula One driver, Stefan Johansson. So week out, still no firm confirmation on this, which we didn't expect, but no one's refuting it. And I think Marshall also reported it's going to happen. So it's going to happen. Any new thoughts on this, Kurt?
No, again, it's a little surprising. It must just be, you know, comes down to money and security for Felix. But, you know, now where I think your attention must start, I don't know if this, how Chip Ganassi Racing feels about Rinus VK, but I think the combination of VK, Hinchcliffe, and Ferrucci, surely it comes from one of those three. But I would also say, I wouldn't be surprised if they just stick to their three cars, meaning Jimmy Johnson and the extra car, if they can't find a talent who has budget as well. I don't think they'll go with just a straight budget guy. I think they want talent to go with budget, and if they can't find somebody who has both, I don't think they run the 10 car. I mean, they may run the 10 car, but it may be Marcus Ericsson.
I would agree with that. And I think that's the conclusion the team came to a few years ago when they dropped from four cars to two cars. So we've decided we're not just going to fill a seat to fill a seat and take a check from someone. So it needs to be a combination, and maybe it doesn't have to be a full budget if it's someone that they rate highly. So that's going to be the question. Is there someone out there that they rate highly enough, and or can they find the budget themselves? Is NTT Data returning to that car? I have to believe if the budget was sorted for that car, they would have already re-signed Felix Rosenquist. So that leads me to feel like the stuff I was hearing, that it wasn't 100% certain, is probably accurate, because I think they would have gotten that done, and I think Felix would have stayed there. When you get to the surprise, that's what would be surprising, is if there was a firm offer on the table for him to leave. But that's why I was not surprised, because I don't believe there was a firm offer ready for him to sign that was 100% guaranteed. So what do they think of Rinus VK? What do they think of James Hinchcliffe? What do they think of Santino Ferrucci? That one would surprise me. If Santino ended up there, that one would surprise me a little bit. And maybe I'm off base on that one. Hinch is the one to keep an eye on. What do they want out of that car? Is it just someone that can win races? Or with Felix, I think they had someone they felt like had a long-term future, someone who could eventually win championships. Would they feel the same way about Hinch in that regard? Or would they just simply say, you know what, he can win races, he has won races, and we'd like to keep the crew intact, maybe for a return to sports cars, but we like the model of having a three or a four car team. So that's all still in play at this point. And here's the other one to keep an eye on, Kurt. You know, up until last week, I think we all assumed that James Hinchcliffe was staying at Andretti Autosport. And for all I know, and I'm being fully honest, I worked with Hinch this weekend, but I don't ask him about these things right now, because he'd probably tell me, and I don't want him to tell me, because I want to keep guessing about things. But for all I know, he's already signed with Andretti. Or if he hasn't, I think that really gives a lot of incentive for Michael to go ahead and get a deal done, because Hinch is the best driver out there. If Genesis is coming back on board, and if they are increasing their involvement a little bit, he's the best driver with the biggest budget available. And if Hinch is gone, I'm not sure who's next for Michael if he wants to remain a five-car team for next year. Maybe it's Rinus VK, but I don't know if that budget is $3 million, $4 or $5 or what it is, but I got to think Michael needs pretty close to a full budget with their program right now, because they have some other salary drivers. So, you know, that's, I think, where it starts. Who's in the 10? Or maybe it kind of goes the other way around. Does Michael announce someone? And you said this, I think, earlier. I think we will have announcements. I think we'll have at least one announcement this weekend for someone, maybe with Michael's team. Is it maybe Ryan Hunter-Reay returning? Because that's another one. If Ryan isn't signed at this point, then maybe the 10 goes after him. Or is it James Hinchcliffe? So I think there's going to be still a lot of news as we move throughout this week. Any final thoughts on this segment before we move ahead?
The only one that I can – I've been scrolling through the driver lineup since you started talking. Ryan Hunter-Reay is the only other one that I could see. I think this is VK, Hunter-Reay, Hinch, or no one in the 10, in the what we think of as the 10.
Yep. Okay. All right. Before we're done tonight, I'm going to get into some of your tweets, if you have them, at KevinLee23 before the end of the show. There have been, I think, a couple of interesting NASCAR things I might touch on. I wanted to spend a moment talking about, I hope you had a chance. If you haven't watched it yet, you might go back and check out the end of Petit Le Mans this past weekend. Alexander Rossi was amazing, making up 5 or 6 seconds late in the final hour at a track that he had never driven and certainly wouldn't know it at night in a very dark circumstance. And then we had full contact in the final 10 minutes of that race. We'll get into that a little bit later on and much more. But coming up in a few minutes, Pato Award. And Kurt also had a chance to talk with Kevin Savery with Green Savery Promotions. This is Trackside, 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
I'm Ryan Honoré, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Welcome back to Trackside. I'm Kurt Cavan, and believe it or not, we've reached the end of this very strange 2020 IndyCar season, and we're ending it where we thought we were going to be starting. Today we're joined by Kevin Savery, President and COO of Green Savery Racing Promotions, which of course has four of the tracks normally on the IndyCar schedule: St. Pete, Toronto, Mid-Ohio, and Portland. I guess, Kevin, I don't even know where to start. This has been such a strange year. You've had to juggle. I know everyone's juggled. It seems like you've had to juggle about as much as anybody with Toronto and Portland not happening in 2020, and St. Pete going from the beginning of the season, and everything was ready to go, and now you're ending the season. Just, I guess, general feelings, how has the reshuffling of everything changed everything you do?
Well, as you've described it, it's been a crazy year. And I don't think for anyone there will ever be a 24 hours in sports or you know, the world as 8 p.m. on Wednesday, March 11th to 8 p.m. on Thursday, March 12th. I mean, it just seemed like everything normal unraveled. And, you know, obviously what we knew about the virus back then to what we know about the virus today is, you know, we just have a lot better understanding of the do's and the don'ts and how to accept a new normal and live in a new normal. And I think obviously for us, that allowed us to get a doubleheader in at Mid-Ohio and you know, can't thank the state of Ohio and the governor and the lieutenant governor and everyone at Morrow County Health for all their efforts to help us get a couple spectator events in. So that was, you know, very, very exciting. And you know, obviously things with Toronto, I mean, obviously in Canada, still to this day, things are still very much more restrictive up there. And you know, Portland was somewhat the same in Oregon. And I think, you know, we've experienced what a lot of folks have described is, you know, there's so much variance between the states on how they handle the virus and what they can and can't do. And you know, obviously on the St. Pete side of thing, Mark Miles called me on the Sunday night, March 15th, and said, is there any way to get this race back on at the end of the year? And I said, it's impossible. Just he said, I know you said it's impossible. I said, it's impossible. It just is. And I said, you know, let me talk to the mayor. Let me talk to my guys. Let me see if, you know, if they have an appetite to give it a go again. And, you know, when I talk to our guys, I mean, they're as feisty as they come. And you know, I think for the world, right? We all got knocked down. And you know, I think for us, it's been about picking yourself up, dusting yourself off, and getting back out there. And I think, you know, our team's a great example of that. You know, I guess what I'm describing is this roller coaster that, you know, our country, the whole world has been on, you know, all this year. And it's just, you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. And we all just have to, deal with the facts as we know them and the science as we know it, and you know, work with that and get on with our lives. And obviously from the get-go, the mayor was like, you know, if there's any way we can make this happen, we want to make it happen. So the planning started literally March 16th as the track's being dismantled. The planning started on how to get this thing back on. And, you know, one of the first steps with that is the city allowed us to leave a major part of the superstructure up for our grandstands and suites. And that really helped on the build side of things. So, it's allowed us to condense our build. We actually didn't start any of the build until Monday, October 5th. And our guys are flat out, but we'll be ready for a car race here in a few days.
Well, I was going to ask you how much of the structure, because did you leave up walls and grandstands and so forth? Were you able to leave up fencing and so forth?
Yeah. So none of the safety system. So all the concrete barriers, all the steel fence, all the cabling, all that had to come down. So that's obviously a big job. So we got that done, but a major part of the superstructure, the grandstand and suites, was allowed to stay up. So that's a big, big help. And, that's a very labor intensive job. It takes a lot of guys to erect those grandstands. So that saved us a lot. And they're the same too. They actually didn't start until October 5th as well. So, again, we're just blessed that we're able to partner with a city like St. Petersburg. And obviously October 1st, the city council voted unanimously to support allowing us to get back out there, and obviously very thankful to them and to Mayor Kreisman. And this is a city that loves this IndyCar race. And I always tell everyone, this is like their Super Bowl. They, down here, all you have to say is Grand Prix. they know it, and it's their race, and it's an unbelievable partnership.
Remind us, Kevin Savory joins us at St. Petersburg. Remind us what you've got in terms of fans coming in this weekend, numbers, and we're all in the habit now of what the requirements look like. So just speaking in terms of how you manage these fans, how many are you looking at?
Yeah. So we're going to be able to have 20,000 fans a day, which in today's numbers is a number that we're, obviously looking forward to hosting, but, we've got good systems in place, and we were able to test those systems in Mid Ohio. So we've got a good learning experience from there. But we always tell everyone, and we work with IndyCar, we've got what to expect when you arrive at the track. So that's, I think that's live as of Friday. And the fans can log in, see what to expect when they arrive at the track. But I always tell everyone, it starts for all of us every morning when you wake up. You really need to think about how you feel, and we always ask all of our guys to take their temperature, and if they don't take their temperature at home, we have it here at the office or wherever, so that you can kind of just be respectful of your colleagues, and so that's kind of the same environment for our fans. So when they arrive, we want them to have already kind of done their own self-check. When they arrive, they'll be socially distanced as they approach the gates. St. Petersburg has a mask on policy. So we'll ask everybody to wear their mask at all times. And we'll ask a few health questions and health screening, and then take their temperature. And, I think everybody will be able to enjoy the day. And we've got what really is the biggest asset for racetracks is they are massive outdoor facilities. So down here, the St. Pete event site is 84 acres, and of that there's about 60 acres that's usable. So obviously we can't put fans in the middle of the racetrack, but the actual usable portion is over 2.5 million square feet. And so it's a lot of room to socially distance 20,000 people. And again, that's our biggest asset. So when you're outdoors, massive outdoor facility, social distancing, wear a mask, everybody's health screened, everybody's wearing a mask except when they're eating or drinking, you know, it's going to be an environment where everybody can be comfortable. And for the first time, St. Pete's going to get to host a championship. So after the second Indy Grand Prix, I sent a text to the mayor and I said, your city gets to host a championship. And I think that's something that's so cool. And I think maybe the racing gods shined on us, right? And said, you know what? We dealt you a wacky one back in March. We're going to give you one back. So we're looking forward to hosting that championship. And, you know, it doesn't get any better. Team Penske against Ganassi Racing and Scott Dixon versus Joseph Newgarden. That's going to be something to see. So obviously thrilled about that.
Kevin Savory joins us. The business model of your company isn't really any of our business, and yet the health of your company is very critical to the IndyCar Series hosting 4 events in a normal year. How have you been able, if you can speak to it in some form, how have you been able to manage losing 2 events and having 2 totally disrupted events in 2020?
Yeah, so, you know, again, I think it was a combination of factors. Fortunately, we were able to batten down the hatches pretty quickly after the St. Pete event went off the rails. So that was step one. Step two, we started working on getting Mid-Ohio back open for our track rentals and our club events, and we were able to do that. That really was a big part of our bread and butter from May up until even now. So that's been a big part of our business model. And then obviously, like so many companies that are out there, we were able to obtain PPP loans, and that was a big help. We were able to keep all of our full-time employees on staff at their regular salaries, and Kim and I are very proud of that because we're a small family company. And I think for us, that's something that was very important from the get-go. We wanted to keep our team intact, and we want to, I know those are very personal decisions for every business owner, but you know, Kim and I are a small company that ask an awful lot from a very small group of incredibly motivated team members. And so, that's how we did it. And so far, so good. I mean, obviously, Kim and I along the ways made some sacrifices, but that's what business owners do. And that's no different than any other business owners that are out there. That's just part of it. But you know, again, I think obviously as we move through the year, Penske Entertainment and Mark Miles, and at the time Steven Starks, and now Michael Montree, and working with Bud Dinker and with Roger Penske, I mean, they've obviously worked with us to try to make sure, you know, like getting Mid-Ohio off, that they, you know, were very fair about how we move forward through that event. I think that's it's a big help for us as well. So we're at the end of the year now. So we're sorry about that. We're getting there.
2021 comes up on you pretty quickly, obviously, and that's it starts with some really good news. If you could speak to how important getting an NBC, channel for the St. Pete race, and then the discussion about moving the race. It seems like it's moved up to March 7th maybe a week earlier than in recent years? Was that planned? Has that been part of the long-range plan? Or was that a case of NBC being available on that date?
It was the NBC opportunity. And obviously, as we were marching through the summer, IndyCar reached out to us and said, look, we think if you can move forward 1 week, we can get NBC for our season opener. It was something they felt very strongly about. I mean, obviously, we're very blessed next year that all three of our U.S. events are on NBC. So that's a big boost for all of us. And, you know, again, I think there are going to be three great events in St. Petersburg, Mid-Ohio, and Portland. So that's awesome. And then, Toronto, we're on the Canadian neighbors up there, which is actually better for us as well. So that's all worked. And, you know, again, I think in a way, I think getting back out here at the end of the year and then having our race again in a little over 4 months is probably the best thing for all of us. So the best advertising we can do for our Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg is get back out there again and do it. And so I think that's actually going to work out really well for us.
Well, we're looking forward to it. It's seems like a long time in our personal and professional timeline since the middle of March when we all scurried out of St. Pete very strangely and quickly. And certainly we didn't get to have the event we wanted, but it's starting to feel normal again, and being in St. Pete will help that.
Yeah. Again, I think for all of us, it's the new normal. And, as we move along, the new normal is, you know, that that's going to migrate a little bit, and you know, we've got a lot of great scientists working on ways to get us all back out there and keep us healthy, and I have a lot of confidence in that. You know, we've got, you know, our country's blessed to have some of the best scientists in the world and some of the best medical companies in the world. So I know that's going to be a big part of the answer. And, you know, again, I think we're just all looking forward to a great championship here on the 25th of October and crowning the 2020 NTT IndyCar Series champion here at the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. I mean, very, very exciting. And then obviously kick off the 21 season just 4 months later.
It's unbelievable. You got a quick turnaround, but a busy time. And as you said, it starts to feel whatever new normal looks like. Kevin, thanks for a few minutes. We'll remember the NBC tune in this weekend. That'll be good. Or is NBCSN?
Oh, I think for
this weekend it is
for the championship or
yeah.
Yeah. It's we're on NBC.
Yeah, it is NBC. I got confused there. It seems like we go back and forth, and this has been a strange week. But yeah, NBC
it's actually really cool, Kurt. That here in St. Pete, we're on NBC that afternoon, and then that night, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers play out in Las Vegas on Sunday Night Football on NBC. So I think the old Tampa DMA is in for a blessed Sunday of sports.
Well, that's good. It's they'll follow you well, the Buccaneers. So you'll give them a good boost lead in. So Kevin, thanks. We'll talk soon and we'll be back more here in just a few minutes on 93.5 107.5 The Fan.
This is Joseph Newgarden and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Welcome back to Trackside. It's Kurt Cavan, and joining us now in this segment, the driver of the number 5 Aero McLaren SP Chevrolet, the guy who's had a really, really remarkable bounce back in his career. We can talk about that here in a little bit. And before we get to the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, Pato, let's just talk about really how well this season has gone. I guess the bounce back I was referring to is a year ago, we weren't really sure what an IndyCar career might look like, and yet you've bounced back in such a terrific way. It's really been strong.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me. I think we've had a fantastic year so far. You know, completely different approach to what last year was like. You know, this year has been really nice to know what is coming, to really set objectives for myself, for the team, and honestly, just, you know, throughout the whole year, start checking them off the list. You know, we've been really strong pretty much everywhere. You know, we've had our highs and lows as well. But man, I really do feel like home. The team has really welcomed me very well, and I feel like we've all been working together as best as can be, and I feel like everything will just get stronger over time. So I'm excited for the potential we all have together in working together, and very much looking forward to the final this weekend.
I think about the five doubleheaders that IndyCar has had this season, and there were a couple of them. I guess I would ask you if having two races at a race weekend, particularly at Road America and then Gateway, two places where you did really well. In fact, Mid-Ohio, in fact, you bounced back pretty well in race two. Having two races at those events, was that did you find that beneficial?
Yeah, actually, I've been a very big fan of the doubleheaders. You know, like I said, it gives you kind of like a chance to bounce back after not having a very good day the first day. You know, we had a very strong weekend in Gateway. In Mid-Ohio, I feel like the speed was there. We just started off very rocky. We had an accident in the practice and then didn't have enough laps before qualifying. So, you know, it's such a competitive series where if you lose a little bit of track time, it really puts you on the back foot. So, you know, Mid-Ohio was trying to salvage what we could for the points in the championship. And then Indy Road Course, I mean, we had a horrific first race. Probably the worst race. Well, the worst race I've had all year, and probably the worst in my career, just because it was so messy. Not because we didn't have the pace, but because everything just went wrong. And it was honestly hell. So, we bounced back in race two. We didn't really quite have the pace to be able to beat the Andretti cars and the Penske cars in front of us. I think we definitely had some work to do to be able to fight a bit harder against them. But you know, I think St. Petersburg will be a good track for us, and we want to close out the year strong, and hopefully we get that win that I truly feel like the team and I deserve, because we've been so close. We've been so close this year, four or five times. And it'd be great to close out the season in a strong note.
Yeah. Pato Award joins us. I think three podium finishes, the pole and the second place finish at Road America. The Gateway qualified second, ran third. Gateway number two, it's kind of same scenario. You run in second. But let's talk about the second trip now to the Indianapolis 500. You didn't make the show last year, different team, different circumstance. This year, obviously, the lack of fans was the big storyline. But how did you feel differently getting a chance to run the 500 this year? How was that race? Colton Herta said the other day that he felt like it went quicker than he expected. How did you feel like the Indy 500 went?
Yeah, I think for a first experience, it was definitely something different. I feel like it's taken me a little bit more time to adjust to super speedways other than any other type of circuit. Short ovals, I've gone right on the ball since the first practice, and I feel very comfortable. Super speedways have taken a bit more on me, and I've had to work at it a little bit more. But I mean, you know, it was an enjoyable race. I feel like I'm on the same boat as Colton. It didn't feel as long as it seemed, or I guess as long as it actually was. Maybe because we're going so fast that you don't really have time to realize, like, you know, the laps go by pretty quick. But you know, I think the guys gave me a very good car to drive. You know, we had a car that deserved to be within the top 10. And I think it was a good start to a 500 journey of hopefully more 500s to come for me, and trying to win it. You know, everybody wants to win that race, and I feel like next year having that race under my belt at least once will give me and the team a bit more confidence going into it, and just kind of more of like a step by step like bracket or to go off of, because it is a very long month, but it can spiral down a black hole very quickly. So it's definitely different to any other weekend that we have.
I was thinking as you were talking there, you've had two of the most incredible teammates this season in having Fernando Alonso at the Indy 500 and Helio Castroneves at the Harvest Grand Prix at IMS. How, any intimidation, I guess, or just immense respect for those two guys in the working relationship that you had? How difficult is it to kind of go, okay, I'm running with Fernando Alonso, or I'm running with Helio Castroneves?
Yeah, it's definitely, I have definitely a very large amount of respect for both of them. You know, I grew up idolizing Fernando specifically, and it was really cool to be able to work with him. It was really cool to be able to race against him. You know, and at the end of the day, the driver in me always kicks in, and you want to beat them. You want to do better than them. And you know, it's a good feeling being able to work with them, to try and create a strong package, but as well as compete against them. You know, guys that you've been seeing race forever. So it's been cool, man. I'm honestly trying to learn as much as I can from guys like that, because you know they have so much knowledge and experience, and I'm just trying to increase my knowledge of anything inside, outside the car, to be able to use it to my advantage and kind of, you know, get to my peak as quick as possible and stay there as long as possible.
So before we get to St. Pete, sorry, I think I interrupted you, but if I didn't, before we get to St. Pete, so you get a confirmation from the team that they'd like to have you back in 2021. That happened, I believe, last week. I've kind of lost track in this pandemic year, which happened in which week, but you get confirmation. How does that happen? Does somebody just call you? Do they send you a text? How do they say, we'd like to bring you back? And what kind of feeling did that give you?
Yeah, well, it actually, for me, it was day two at the Harvest GP where, before the race, actually, Taylor just, he said, hey, let's go to the driver lounge. And he just told me there very quick, like, hey, you know, you've earned this and we're going to have you back. We're going to take your option in the contract to have you back for next year. And yeah, you've done a superb job. And, you know, I said, thank you. And we had a race coming up. So, you know, I didn't really have the time to like, appreciate it. But, you know, after I was done, I you know, I told them, you know, thank you very much. And I feel like they deserve all the results that we've gotten this year, and they deserve more because, you know, the car has been very competitive, very quick. Everybody works really, really hard. And I know they know I work my ass off in and out the track every single day, 24/7. So, man, I'm really excited for 2021. I'm kind of sad 2020 is going to be over because there's just one more race and I'm going to be bored, but I'm just so ready to start 2021 and truly, you know, hunt down the championship. I want to try and truly win, and I feel like we can achieve it.
Yeah. You're a live in the moment kind of guy, but you know, I have enough perspective to think about this. There aren't many guys, drivers, men, women, what have you, who have kind of lost their momentum to some degree with IndyCar and then gotten back. And not only that, now you're in a chance to really make something happen for the long term. At some point, you'll probably have some perspective on that. But just year over year, that had to, what Taylor brought you in to talk about had to be just even more special.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you know, it's been a tough road. It's just been such a roller coaster, and it's been really important to just stay in the game. I mean, keep your head down and just keep pushing. I honestly never had a doubt in my mind that I couldn't do it. I mean, I always knew I could. I just needed the chance. And as soon as I got the chance, I said, "Oh, this is gonna be the time to show what you got, and the time to prove that, you know, you belong there and that you are the driver that they want." And yeah, you know, that's what we all have to do. I feel like everybody has had to earn their spot in the series, whether it's Dixon, Newgarden, you know, everybody that's come up has a rough times of some sort. So it's definitely a very good feeling that it basically shows you that they see that you give it your all and that you're honestly giving them what they want. And they obviously see the potential of you giving them more. And I do, you know, we want to try and win championships together, win races. You know, that's what we're in the game for.
Auto Award joins us. Okay, we'll turn our attention to this weekend's Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. You've not raced there in an IndyCar. You did win a lights race there in 2018. The other race that weekend, you won the pole. In fact, I think you've been there a couple times with a couple different lights teams. And I can't remember if that's the extent of your experience at the St. Pete, but what kind of feelings do you have? I guess you're 12 points back of Power for fourth, 25 back of Colton Herta for third. Third is in play. Fourth is definitely in play. And worst case scenario, it looks like you're going to be fifth in the championship. How do you package all that together?
Yeah, I mean, to be truly honest with you, it's the last race. And I want to get back to where I was in the championship, which is third. So I want to win this race. There's honestly nothing else on the table for me. It's obviously not going to be easy, but that's the goal. That's the objective. And that's my full on focus. I want to win the race. And man, I've been just so hungry for a race win this year, and we've been so close. And I truly want to do it, and I want the team to you know, to get it with me, because I feel like they truly deserve it.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, especially after I told you a couple weeks ago that my wife nearly ran over you on a bike on the Monon Trail. It was a near disaster to take out the Rookie of the Year for the Indy 500. So you've put all that behind you, and you're focused forward, and you just watch where you're going on your runs. So appreciate
that.
Yeah,
for sure. No, it's gonna be a good week, and I really enjoy going there. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
All right, Pato Award, kind enough to join us. We're gonna be back in a few minutes here on 93.5 and 107 The Fan. Stay with us.
This is Will Power, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
One more to go, and then a shorter offseason. In fact, this is going to be the shortest offseason for IndyCar in quite a few years. That's the only positive we have, and we'll hold our breath and fingers crossed that 2021 goes a little bit better. You know, in a season, you know, let's face it, this is a sport that can't just exist on television revenue. It's one that is based, the model is based on fans and sponsors and everything else. And to be able to finish the season, and we're not there yet, I'll say this with more certainty coming up next week, but that's a major accomplishment in and of itself. The Firestone Grand Prix is coming up Sunday afternoon right here on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan, and at 2:30 on NBC. Plus 32 is the advantage for Scott Dixon, finishing ninth. He wins the championship if Joseph Newgarden wins the race, and bonus points. Then things get a little more interesting if Dixon doesn't finish ninth or higher. And if Dixon finishes 18th, Newgarden
has to finish second and score bonus points to win the championship. So it's still very much in Dixon's favor, but a lot still in play, including some of the other things we've talked about tonight. I like this note from our stat man, Russ Thompson. If either Dixon or Newgarden complete every lap, all 100, they would join just Tony Kanaan in 2004. I remember that. And Simon Pagenaud. Yeah, I forgot about that, but now that I see it, I do remember that. In 2017, the only drivers, I did not know this, since World War II, to complete every lap during the season. I knew at one point Kanaan was the only one in the Indy Racing League era to complete every lap in a season, but since 1945, those are the only two that have completed every single lap all season, and two more this season. Yes, you're down two or three races than normal, but they've had some 14 race seasons before, and that's in play for them this weekend. I like this note from Chad200 on Twitter as well. Dixon has led the point standings after every round. If he wins the title, it'll be just the fourth time a driver has gone wire to wire. The others, 1980, Johnny Rutherford in kart, Bourdais in 06 in Champ Car, and then also 2001, so no particular order, Sam Hornish Jr. in what was the Indy Racing Northern Lights Series at the time. So Saturday, Sunday is when everything gets started. Long practice, 2 hours on NBC Sports Gold, qualifying in the afternoon, Firestone Fast 6 and knockout qualifying, and it airs at 8 o'clock on Saturday night on NBCSN, a warm-up Sunday morning on NBC Sports Gold, and then the race at 2:30 on NBC. The IndyCar season will be done, and the next one will start almost immediately. There's some testing plan that we'll get into next week and go over details. And, for example, the list I've seen coming up in early November has 4 Ganassi cars, 5 Andretti cars. So if they hold firm to that, we're going to know who's in those cars. Maybe those reservations were simply made, though, in the past, and things can always change on that front. What else? Oh, I mentioned the Petit Le Mans race. I hope you had a chance to see it. Just a big IndyCar influence. 6 or 7 drivers, depending on whether you're counting Elio or not. Unfortunately, Elio isn't going to get to participate this weekend, but fortunately, Oliver Askew is cleared medically and back in the number 7 car to show what he can do to try to find a ride. You know, we were talking earlier about those to consider. That's my fault for not putting Oliver Askew on that list, because I think he is rated highly by some people. And if the team, if Ganassi can find some budget where they're just hiring, don't count out Oliver Askew. Don't count him out of that seat. He's not going to have any funding to bring along, but if the team is simply choosing a driver, you know, and especially if some others are already re-signed, I think that's a possibility for Oliver moving forward. So I think we should all keep an eye on that one. But back to the sports car race. So at one point, the 6 Acura Team Penske car was in charge. They took contact from LMP2 car that we really never saw on screen midway through. They led the first 5 hours, and then they had to take an extra stop, fell behind. The 7 car was one of those very much in the mix, and it was going to go between them and the 31 Action Express Cadillac. And when Rossi got in the Penske car late, remember, he didn't do this race last year, doesn't have laps there. He chased, who was in the car at the time in the 31? It might have been Felipe Nasr. I could be wrong on that. Maybe it was already Pipo Durrani. But he got the lead. They went back and forth. Just did a masterful job setting up Ricky Taylor against Pipo Durrani in the last stint. Durrani got by him in what some said didn't give Ricky Taylor a whole lot of room. And then with about 7 or 8 minutes to go, Ricky Taylor did a move down into 6 and 7. And they made contact. Both went around. And the number 10, which, oh, by the way, includes Scott Dixon. He wins again. The last time he was in a sports car, he won at Daytona. So Ryan Briscoe and Ranger van der Zande, who finished up the race, won for Wayne Taylor Racing. So just really fun stuff on Saturday night at Petit Le Mans. And we will still have 2 more sports car races at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca and at Sebring after the IndyCar season is done. And you'll see a lot more of those IndyCar drivers again at the 12 Hours of Sebring coming up on November 14th. We're out of time. Thanks for joining us. We're back next Tuesday night. Thanks to Brad Huber. For Kurt Cavett, I'm Kevin Lee. It's Trackside on 93.5, 107.5 The Fan. Listening live? Well, in progress, we join Game 1 of the World Series now.